Let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
Kevin.
And I'm John.
And I'm Mike.
Hey!
And this is 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger, the podcast where we take a long, hard look back at some of our favorite action movies from the era of Arnold!
Now, Schwarzenegger is the icon of the genre, but we're taking a deep dive into all of these 80s and 90s cult action movies, and we're breaking them all the way down.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome back, mate.
G'day.
G'day, mate.
I'm going to keep saying it.
Go for it. How you doing, Mike?
I'm good.
So thrilled to have a founding member of the podcast back with his original gangsta.
Feels to be good.
You threw a boomerang and came right back.
Mike is so drunk.
I'm Reginald Feldarsonville.
Oh, my God. So,
I'm telling you, I have to bring my kids and just have them sit on my lap.
Yeah, man, let them get used to this. Yeah. Get them a little, put a little sippy top on top of that beer.
The more the merrier.
As many beers that have been sitting around my house, I'm sure they've already tasted beer.
So we're here to talk more about Crocodile Dundee. This is episode 3.
Welcome back.
Bring us up to speed on the plot. This is like a beautifully simple plot.
Yeah.
We got big city reporter Sue. She's from New York in Australia. To do some stories. She's tracking down Crocodile Dundee, this like legendary bushman. He had a near-death experience out in the wild, attacked by a crocodile.
What?
Crawled out of whatever, life, the jaws of death.
Yeah.
Literally.
The swamp.
Yeah, so she's tracked him down. She wants to get his story to report to her newspaper. So she's paid him to sort of recount the story as they're hiking through the wilderness. So that's where they're at. They've sort of found some common ground. They're bonding a little bit. He saved her life from a giant crocodile.
Right.
There's something magical about Crocodile Dundee.
We can't quite put our finger on it.
Yeah, he's got like the touch. He's got the glow.
Got the
from,
touch.
From The Last Dragon.
He's connected with the local tribes.
Yeah, he grew up amongst the Aboriginal people.
So he's got their respect.
He's just an all-around good dude. A little sexist. Little like rough around the corners,
but in a very charming way.
He's learning,
like your drunk uncle.
He's learning, and he's learning from her as well. I think, like,
yeah.
So that basically gets us up to speed.
So yeah, we pick up the next morning, the day after she was almost killed by the crocodile. Mick is walking Sue through the woods, explaining that it took him a week to get this far, and he thought he was a goner. She asks if he was afraid, and he's like, "Of dawn? No." That he read the Bible once and Jesus and the disciples were fishermen, so he figures that he'd go straight to heaven when he died. Yep. Me and God, we'd be mates. I like that. That whole sentiment is awesome.
He's like oozing wisdom,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
He's like, I love that. Oh, yeah, I read the Bible once. Like, I gleaned what I needed from it. And that's, you know, I wonder how much of this stuff, like, coming out of Dundee's mouth is Paul Hogan's own personal philosophy.
Yeah.
It's a great point.
So I was actually thinking about this earlier today, you're just bear with me on this one right here. But I kind of compared Mick Dundee to Jesus, right? So Jesus was probably a real person, right?
Yeah.
But the way people talked about him, they built him up into, like, this.
They built a legend.
Like, they built a legend. This
sure.
is who Mick Dundee is. Like, everybody's building Mick into this legend.
People forget that Jesus shat like everyone else.
Or you think about Braveheart, fucking William Wallace, where he's like, oh, he's not 12 feet tall,
exactly.
The legends that we heard.
Yeah,
lightning
about
comes
him.
From his arse.
Exactly.
Yeah. Lightning, yeah, I'll kill him with lightning
except
bolts.
Except for
his ass.
Braveheart didn't want that kind of recognition, and I think Mick Dundee does, you know?
I don't know. He didn't, like, seek fame out. She found him, right? Like, he was not doing interviews and stuff after.
I think, to be fair, Wally probably sought her out.
Yeah. Wally helped her find him.
Oh, no, he answered that phone call for sure.
Yeah.
So, sometime later in the day, they arrive at a beautiful lake.
That location was nuts.
The place is unreal. He calls it Echo Lake. It is played by the Gunlum Waterfall Creek in Kakadu National Park in the Northern Territory.
That's awesome.
And so Mick explains that he reckons that this place, this pool of water, saved his life, that it's mineral water, so there are no crocs, but there's plenty of food.
Plenty of tucker.
Yeah, plenty of tucker. I love the gentle dropping of Australian slang yeah. throughout the movie, yeah, tucker. Yeah. So she says, good, because I'm hungry as shit. So cut to, he's got what is called a goanna lizard roasting on a spit. She does not look excited about eating it. He says, it's great, encourages her to try the Hakuna Matata Lion King style smorgasbord he's prepared with, like,
yams,
bugs and ants and... Yeah, he's like, just bite the end off. They're really sweet. Black fellas love them.
Okay. And I heard that. I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
But
that, I thought he was talking about the actual yam when he said that. But he's actually talking about people, right?
Well, no, but black fellas is... That's Aboriginal people slang.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
That's what Aboriginal people refer to black Each people other. As black fellas.
Oh, okay.
And white people are white fellas.
Gotcha.
And I'm like, okay... But it does come off as like a, ooh.
Yeah, there's a lot cringy. Of moments in this movie, right?
Dude, I've never eaten reptile. Have either of y'all eaten reptile before?
I've eaten alligator, and I've eaten frog.
Yeah?
And amphibian, I know, but...
What's the gator like?
Tastes like chicken.
I think that the gator was probably seasoned because it tasted a little bit like sausage meat.
But it wasn't in a link? It was like
it was just like on a spit.
Okay.
That had been like put over a fire.
Huh.
I wonder if you can get that at Buford.
I guarantee.
Probably gator. Maybe not frog legs, but
definitely gator. I bet you can find it Buford Highway somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
the cow farmers market might have some of that stuff.
You will not be surprised to know that frog legs taste just like chicken. They're delicious. They taste just like chicken.
Just not a lot of meat on them, though. Huh?
Yeah. They're small. It's like eating quail's legs, but just slightly bigger.
So, out of curiosity,
yeah, man,
how did you?
Once upon a time, my Uncle Danny took my brother and I frog gigging.
Gotcha.
And that is where you load up in a canoe in the middle of the black night, in the darkness, no moon. You want to go out with no light whatsoever. And you get in a canoe, and ideally there's more than one person in the boat. One to anchor the boat with the paddle, one to shine the light in a frog's eyes, and then the third person to sit at the front of the boat and throw the spear and kill the frog. Ah. And then, so the light mesmerizes
and
them.
And you were nine.
I was like 11 or 12. So that's the thing, you shine the light in their eyes, the frog sort of blinded and mesmerized, mm-hmm. and then you spear them. And then my uncle took the frog by its back legs and beat it over the side of the boat to kill it. And then we took it home. He skinned it. You pour salt on it.
Yeah. That's where you said the legs were twitching.
And the legs kicked. Because all the nerve endings were...
Fuck.
Were
That's not for me.
Yeah.
We're stimulated. I might eat the frog legs, but I don't need to know how they were made.
That's a lot of trouble.
It is a lot of trouble for a bite of meat.
You got to be hungry, right?
A lot of trouble for... And I wondered, I was like, why? It can't be that good that we're out here. And it was 2:00 in the morning.
Yeah.
And we were like 11 and 12 years old.
Tradition, I guess.
And your parents were like,
good night. See you tomorrow. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, there you go. That's frog legs. Enjoy.
I think Mick Dundee would appreciate that story.
Mick Dundee, he has definitely frog gigged in his time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So, yeah, Dundee encourages her to eat everything, bite the ends off. They're really sweet. So she tries the food. She seems underwhelmed. She's like, aren't you going to eat it? And he's like, me? Oh, well, you can live off of it, but it tastes like shit.
He produced the can of I don't know what.
Yeah,
like
I hope
peaches
it was the,
or something
the,
like that.
The Dinky Doo or whatever from Mad
Max.
Oh,
the dog food.
That
awesome. Dinky Day.
Yeah, Dinky Day. That's what it was.
Sue thought that was hilarious.
Yeah,
though.
She's
that.
Like the like playful pats on his shoulder. Mm-hmm. So later, after an overhead shot swim and some spearfishing of what we hope was a fake fish.
I got to learn to spearfish, man. Because as he was doing that, like, she was watching with the thirst.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she looked perfect.
She was like, I'm being provided for in the wilderness. So they're talking on the lakeshore. She was definitely objectifying him. She's like, she all of a sudden is like, you should come back with me to New York because it'd be great for the story, you know, having you in the city. And then Mick's like, ah, well, I thought you were trying to make a pass at me.
This is smooth.
And she's like, I might have been. And then she's like, would you mind if I was? Mm. Damn. And they kiss.
Yeah.
Here on the shores of Echo Lake in the Northern Territory.
He went with the face grip technique. He like grabbed her by the face and kissed her.
It was interesting.
We've seen it in other movies.
He's a manly man.
I guess.
That's
I don't
a
know.
Man's kiss.
I've
never seen that
like,
in life.
Is it like an actor's choice, or is that how Paul Hogan would kiss a young woman?
I don't know.
Let me kiss you like a father. So anyway, so they kiss, but before anything could happen, we hear "Wee!" And it's like a hoot of some kind, and then Mick says, "That must be Walt. He's only been here a dozen times, so he's probably lost."
And when I was a younger viewer, I don't know why, because it's very clearly explained.
Right.
I always thought that was either Walt or Neville, like, sort of given that, like, woo! I'm watching you, and, like, I see that kiss.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought
so. So that was Walt letting them know that he was around.
I think he was I'm lost. Walt.
Yeah.
Come find me.
I think that it was based on the dialogue that we get in a second was Walt saying, I'm here and I've seen you.
Oh, so you think he was looking?
I think he'd seen them and was like just letting them know he's here so that things didn't get weird.
Well, what do you think would have happened if Walt hadn't arrived? Was it going to go further?
I think that they probably would have made out. And we'll talk more about this as we discuss the movie.
So
but
I can see, you're right, I see Mick not thinking it proper to have sex with her on the first go. As Bushman-y as he is, I would see then he would think that was not proper.
Like a gentleman?
I think that he understands, like, this whole thing has set her up. It's like a fantasy for her. Like, he's built it up on purpose.
Yeah.
And then she's, like, in that moment. I think he's in the moment, too. But also, I don't think he wants to take advantage.
Sure. So you don't think he kisses every, like,
I don't think
tumor that he has out there?
I don't think he does. I honestly don't.
Okay.
So later on, as they're loading up the truck, Wally seems to sense that there's something in the air.
Smells like sex out here.
And or he saw it. He's like, I smell the wetness. I don't. So he not so subtly asks Mick, complete with like fucking hand motions. Like,
yeah.
Did you make it with Sue?
So the way he comes off, like,
cyanamol,
he's not surprised, right? He's like, hey, so did you hit that? You know?
Yeah.
Like, did this happen before? Like you were saying,
I think he could sense the energy between those two. Them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if maybe it had been a while since Mick had had like chemistry with a woman. Because again, there can't be that many tourist groups that are coming out here because they're struggling for cash.
Sure. Ida the barkeep.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Hot.
And like that other hot bartender.
And hot barkeep
number
two.
But he says it
so
quickly that he almost expected for those two to like hook up on their trip.
Maybe.
And he may have just because they're two, well, one young and one middle-aged handsome couple.
Yeah, but he doesn't come off as like an old dude though. Like when you said he was that age, I was surprised.
How old do you think Crocodile Dundee is supposed to be?
40.
Really? I would have thought. Well, yeah,
younger than 40.
I would have thought like Hans 35 maybe.
Okay.
Like
I think
Hansel
40
age.
And she's 30. That's how I read it, which is, you know,
that's close.
I'm trying to make that work in my life.
No.
I was struck by the fact that Walt is like wearing the same shit. Like just that dirty ass like safari suit. Like I just wondered, does he have a bunch of those? Or is it just I wear the same shit every day?
I think that he probably washes the undershirt and then puts everything on over it.
Like Swearingen from
I think Sean Mellon was available for 2 days worth of shooting.
Oh, well, maybe. Yeah,
he just gave him the same outfit.
Yeah, he didn't have a lot of screen time if you get down to it.
Yeah.
As memorable as he is.
So after Walt suggests that Dundee may have had sex with Sue, Dundee's like, nah, like, plays dumb. He's a gentleman about it.
Walt had, like, a case of the giggles. He's
he did. Yeah, Sue tells Walt that she wants Mick to come back to New York. Walt's skeptical but quickly changes his mind when she says that the paper is going to pay for it. He's like, Well, a man should broaden his horizons.
But what was he thinking? It was not like the paper's going to pay for Mick to stay in New York. The paper's not going to pay.
Airfare. I think airfare and hotel.
But how does that benefit?
I think it goes through the business.
Maybe they do pay for his time.
I think that it goes through the business.
Like, I'll pay another $2,500 for a week or whatever.
It goes through Never Never Safari Tours.
Sure.
Okay.
So
I think they book his time. They book his time for a week, and instead of having him take him in the wilderness, they'll take him to New York.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. I was about to say, how does that benefit the business with Mick? In fact, I would think that would be bad for business if they're
he's not around to give tours.
Their guy is not around to give tours.
Do you think Walt's ever seen the world?
Has
he been outside of Australia?
Mick said that he's seen the big city. Yeah.
He's been to Sydney, though, do you think? Or has he been all around London and shit?
I think he's probably been to at least England.
Think about it. He probably fought in the war.
God, he probably did.
He was like seeing North Africa and Italy and shit.
Yeah, absolutely. So cut to a Qantas airliner on the tarmac. A visibly nervous Mick is trying to play it cool as the plane's like getting ready to take off.
Wait, why has Mick agreed to do this? Is it because he liked for Sue? Well, does he want to not leave Sue?
He seems like an adventurous type guy, right? So it's like somebody gives me an offer to go to New York City, I'm going to take it, right?
I think Wally said it's good for business. And number two, I think, and we'll talk about this more as we discuss the movie, that kiss really did a number on Mick.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that the time that he was spending with her, I think that he's like legitimately into her. And he's like, as much time as I can spend with this woman.
Yeah.
If you want to go way back to even the kangaroo scene where he didn't care at all what the poachers were doing to the kangaroos, and she kind of like changed his mind.
True.
So he took a liking to her as soon as he saw her. But then the kangaroo scene.
Her vibe.
Think about the context of the rest of the movie. He puts up with a lot of shit, I'll just say, because of her.
For her.
Yeah. And we'll get more into
himself
that
to her
in a moment. We'll get more into it like in due course.
Okay.
So the plane lifts off and we just hear VO, Jesus Christ. He's like, never been in a plane, which is awesome. So we cut to...
Wait, I don't know if this is accurate, but I read somewhere that you can't get a passport without being able to prove your date of birth.
Made one
that
up.
That would make sense.
I guess.
But I don't know if you have a birth certificate or something.
Again, that's probably went to his whole mythology. Like, I
think you just gloss over that.
Again, sure. I would be interested in, like, does that hold true for Aboriginal people that might not have a birthday?
Is there a workaround? It's true enough. If you don't have... I was born in a situation where there wasn't a birth certificate.
A way to keep record of that.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Let's go with that. Yeah. That makes all the sense in the world.
So we cut to, the downtown Manhattan skyline. Uh-huh. We love it. Focus on the Twin Towers. You're a character in the movie. We love you.
Has there ever been a more clear-cut, like, midway point to a movie?
No.
Than this?
Oh, this is almost like two movies for
and
sure.
And this is, like, it's like we get the, I call it the buddy cop music. Horn.
It's the New York theme, I guess.
This has got that kind of, you know how all those movies were made in like Toronto, but they look like New York. It's got that feel to it, but they clearly shot it in New York City, right?
Yeah. It's like, but that music immediately tells me this is the 80s and this is New York.
Yeah.
It's like, so we see Richard, Sue's boyfriend from the cold open. He's at the airport to greet her. She's wearing a headscarf again. He's mesmerized by her beauty. Then they kiss.
Sure.
And wait just a minute here. She was kissing Mick Dundee not 48 hours ago.
That's totally scandalous.
And now she's making out with her boyfriend in the airport.
Yeah, I think, you know, out of sight, out of mind with Sue.
Yeah, but I mean, would she have kissed Richard if Mick had been standing there with him instead of at the customs?
She brought him back to New York.
Did she explain things to him on the plane?
I've got a boyfriend here.
I think
she would probably say, my boyfriend's going to meet us at the airport. Probably.
Do you think that a person like Mick Dundee would be like, what the
Why didn't
fuck
you tell
you
me that before
about?
I got on this plane?
I just flew all the way from Australia.
If I had known you had a boyfriend, I never would have got on this plane.
Mick Dundee would have opened the door and jumped off the plane. The Mick Dundee I know. So anyway.
You don't think he would have taken a free trip to New York, though?
I think he thought he was going to smash, though.
I think that he would have thought, that's annoying.
I would have taken a Yeah, well, yeah, I agree with that, but I still think I would take a free trip to New York City.
I think that he kind of got...
I think he senses, like, some cracks in the foundation, though. He wants to get
maybe,
in there.
Maybe he...
Well, he did
maybe,
kiss her, so yeah, there's definitely
I
something
I bet
there.
You, I bet at some point she did say, look, the situation at home is complicated. I've got a boyfriend. I don't know how to break it off with him, maybe, or whatever. But then later... Anyway, we'll get there.
We'll get there.
That's a false hypothesis. Anyway, Richard notices Dundee's not around. Sue explains that he got slowed down in customs. Richard's immediately disdainful of Mick as we see him like come down and coming down the escalator. Yeah.
They should be too. I mean, I know they.
You were gonna say Richard?
Yeah, I know they paint him as the bad guy in this movie.
I mean, if your girl went out of town on a business trip and was like, "Hey, I met this guy in Australia. He's coming back with
me." Yeah.
It's for work.
Fucking what?
It's for work. Nah.
Fuck all that.
Yeah.
This is for work. This is a fun fact Kevin clued me into. The entire state of Wyoming only has two escalators.
Yeah, I don't know how that. Oh no, I a girl taught me that.
Oh,
told me some. Thanks, girl. Yeah,
I did not know that.
That's crazy. They said it's not because of law or anything.
And they're
like
both
that.
In the mall.
I think they're both in an airport somewhere, or maybe both in a shopping mall somewhere.
It's that flat.
I think there's just no reason to build up because there's no shortage of land, you know, to spread
that's
out.
That's also true.
I get Dundee being a little leery of an escalator. Like, I think everyone, your first time on an escalator, you're like,
have you ever watch a child come down an escalator
get to
for
the bottom
first time?
Of it? It's like, holy
so
shit.
So it's definitely classic, like, fish out of water, but I think they went too far with it.
He's a grown-up. He gonna kill a crocodile, but he's scared of a escalator.
Wasn't it kind of funny, kind of endearing to see him be like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Well, I think they have to lay it on thick that now he's the... fish out.
Yeah, but I'm surprised they didn't do like a big split where his like foot was like on the top of the escalator and
that would
like
be awesome.
Elf like
that.
Yeah, like Elf. Oh, yeah,
that would have been awesome. So outside in a limousine, Gus the driver, played by Carl Winslow, Reginald Vell Johnson.
Hell yes.
He's telling Mick that New York's home to 7 million people. Mick marvels that 7 million people all want to live together in the same place, and it must be a friendly place.
What a logical thing to think.
Yeah, it's like, well, that everyone must get along.
There
was like a giant episode of Three's Company where there's always just like a misunderstanding that leads to like comedy.
You would think, everyone must love the...
I love visiting New York City. I would never want to live there. Unless I was like
I
a
like a visit, but it's like, it would be a
wondered.
Lot.
I do love visiting.
A lot to live there.
And I thought that I would like to live there. Not sure. We'll see. One day, maybe. So Gus, Sue, and Richard are all amused by Mick. At a red light, I love this. Like, like the windows roll down. He like leans out and introduces himself to a stranger. I'm in town a couple of days. Probably see you around.
It's a beautiful moment.
I love that. The dude that he's talking to is like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that New York Australia. Like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Quit talking to me.
Fuck off. But
yeah, the guy like looks back at him as he drives off like, what? What
well,
just
what
happened?
What just happened?
It was crazy,
So they pull up to the plaza. A bellhop takes Mick's sack.
He was rocking that same like luggage that Axel Foley had.
Yeah.
It's just like a
all I
sack
need is
with a drawstring.
Sure, yeah.
It's a non-regulation rucksack. So
when did Beverly Hills Cop come out?
84.
So I wonder if they got that out because it literally looks like the same.
Man, I think it's just the type of unpretentious luggage that an Axel Foley or. It's almost like something you would imagine a soldier carrying back from
John Rambo.
The front lines or some shit. Oh, yeah, Rambo had a duffel bag.
He just put all those outfits in that one little
sack. Yeah, a duffel bag. Yeah.
I don't know, but it fits Dundee's character, don't you
think?
Yeah, definitely.
He does not own a suitcase. That man does not own
Samsonite
luggage.
Samsonite? No.
Samsonite. So Mick thanks Gus for the ride, which is awesome, and then asks him what tribe he's from. Initially, Gus is like, man, I'm not from a tribe. Uh-huh. It almost seems sort of like put off by the question.
Sure, yeah.
And then Mick says, you're a black fella, aren't you? And Gus says, last time I looked. And then he like checks out, Mick checks out the limo. He's like, no one in our tribe's got a flash car like this, so you must be doing all right. Pretty awesome. And then Carl Winslow is like charmed, flattered.
Sergeant Al Powell.
Yeah, is like.
When did Die Hard come out?
88, 88,
okay. So he hadn't made it just yet.
Yeah, 88. I think it was 87, 88. But I think 88. I think you're right.
So So this is just around the corner, right?
Yeah, dude. Okay. He was like on his way to really break it through.
He was about to go off.
I mean, I love when you like watch old movies, and if you look at the end of the credits and you see like that one person that blows up, you know, and becomes like a big time actor.
Can we just talk about though how like good Reginald Vell Johnson is, even in the smallest role?
Yes,
he's fucking awesome.
He's so likable.
He gives so much in that face as Mick walks away.
Like,
he cycles through 10 different emotions, states of mindfulness, like in one. It's like, God damn, that's impressive.
It reads like he can't tell if he should be offended or not.
Right.
I think he realizes it's clear that Dundee meant
he's not meaning no harm.
Yeah, that, again, Mick is the drunk uncle. Like, he means no harm, but he says the most offensive things.
You kind of just let him slide.
Yeah. I do wonder, in Dundee's life, like, is it the case that the only black people he would ever encounter are Aboriginal people?
Like I think that's likely.
Surely in Australian cities, there are, are just black people.
But he's never been to a city.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, in his orbit, he's never encountered.
I will say that at one time I knew the statistic, but I do not know it now about the demographic breakdown in Australia, because so many people in Australia are part of the British Empire.
Yeah.
So they would have an influx of Indian people.
Sure. And, was there not a lot of like West Indies?
And some people from West Indies, but I feel like that's fewer and further between.
It's a long way away.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I would say had he lived in a big city, he likely would have run into people.
I think that he's only seen Aborigines his whole life.
Yeah.
And he's never seen like, you know, anybody else.
So he's just like, oh, you're a black person. You must be from a tribe.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when I was in high school and had some friends of mine who had moved from like upstate New York to where I lived in North Carolina. And I don't think they had ever seen a black person in person.
Wow.
Upstate New York. So yeah, I think that Mick has never seen.
I have a friend from high school who is black, who lives in South Dakota with her family. And she says, like, she'll go a week, 2 weeks without seeing another black person other than, you know, her own family members. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's just got to be odd.
Yeah, oh yeah.
We stay from our home base in Atlanta.
But I also wonder, like, if Gus had said, yeah, I'm from a tribe, and it's, like, given an American tribe name, like, would...
That would mean nothing.
Nothing to Mick.
Like, it is a little odd that he would assume that you're from an Aboriginal tribe,
or
just a tribe. Period. Like, we get that he's like a backwoods country bumpkin, but he can't be that dumb or that just.
I mean, that maybe he knows people are
from Australia,
which actually he alludes to later in the movie.
He says, "Are you sure you're not from this tribe?"
Yeah,
and it's like he can't be, not the same continent. Anyway,
it's a can of worms.
Yeah. Like I said, that they play up his like ignorance a little too much. I think
country bumpkin.
And that was the negative review, like the overall point of all the negative reviews that I read about this movie was that like it made, I mean, it doubled down on this because. This movie, like we said, it hangs its hat on Paul Hogan's charm, but it's like, you
he's
know,
too
that,
naive.
That fish out of water thing, it's like, it's too much. It's like impossible.
Like you have to be like really stupid.
So on the steps of the plaza, Richard suggesting that they go, they being he and Sue, go someplace special for dinner tonight. He's annoyed when Sue says to make it a reservation for three.
You're on team Richard right now?
You just got back from Australia where you stayed like an extra 2 weeks. I haven't seen you in how long? Like, when he was on the phone at the very beginning of the movie, he had expected her back already.
Right.
And so now she's even 2 weeks later than that. And so the first night she gets back, she wants to go to dinner with her man and another dude.
Do people not suffer from jet lag in this reality?
Like, why wouldn't they say
in 2 days' time,
and
we'll reconvene for dinner. Tonight, I'm going to go home. You rest. We'll rest. But she's like,
I want to go to dinner.
And it's Australia, so she's got some severe.
I feel like it's breakfast time or something.
I also want to say, as this movie will unfold as we discuss this movie, I'm not sure that she's not coked up more than half the time.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, man.
That's a bold thesis.
I agree with that, though.
I think that she is steady doing some some drugs, some uppers.
Do you think she had it out with her in the bush?
Fuck yeah.
No, I think she was probably, like, munching on some, like, medicinal leaf out there.
So, she did some lines on the plane for damn certain to get up and be like, let's go to dinner. Wow.
So I get her not wanting. I get you bringing him from Australia to here. It'd be kind of shitty to be like, order some room service or something because I'm going to dinner with my boyfriend. But she does need to, like, go back to the hotel and break Richard off real quick. You know what I mean? And then come back for dinner and then hook Richard up again
later.
You
don't think that Mick Dundee, if she'd said, we've been traveling for almost 2 days.
Let's have apart from each other.
I'm going to sleep. I'm going to go home. We'll see you tomorrow.
Catch you in the morning.
We'll have breakfast.
Yeah, or breakfast.
We'll start the day off tomorrow.
Does he have money? Does he know how to obtain food?
Everything's on her. Here's the funny part. In the second movie, he does.
You got the gold mine.
In this movie, we don't know that.
That's also true.
But he's not going to show up with nuggets of gold and be like,
right.
Give me a hamburger.
In this movie, I think that everything is on the newspaper.
Charge it to the room.
Yeah.
Shit. Yeah.
So anyway, Richard is annoyed, which Mike agrees with.
I kind of agree.
It's also important that we got off the plane.
We got to establish also that he's, like, insecure.
Yeah.
He should be.
This is the first.
That's like you and the girl she told you not to worry about.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is the first moment that we kind of get the fact that Richard's, like, a little bit like, okay. But she, you know, she laughs as she looks back to find, you know, Gus showing the Cadillac's engine.
I love that. Yeah, he's just, like curious about shit he hasn't seen before.
Sure, this is a nice car.
But he's seen a car before.
What kind of engine does it have? But I get how he's saying, like, I've never seen anything like this. What's the engine like? He's like, well, let me pop the hood.
Does he look like a car engine type guy?
It's better than
he's a motorhead. Yeah.
It's better than the El Camino while he drives back on the ranch. So anyway, Sue accompanies Mick up to his room. I love that he's smoking a cigarette
in a crowded elevator.
Right.
Shitty.
Again, 1980s.
A time capsule, yeah.
Has he ever ridden in an elevator before, Mick Dundee? Probably not. In his life.
I mean, if he's never been on an
he's
escalator,
never seen an escalator,
he's surely never been on an elevator.
I guess elevators are more common.
So why wasn't there that scene where he's like,
he may have been in a regional law building or something that had an elevator.
It would also seem like magic. You step into a room and the door closes and the door opens and something else is different as outside.
And he was smoking a cigarette. I feel like that's
he was nervous smoking.
Yeah. So bellhop leads the way to a spacious suite. How many of us are staying here? And she's laughing. Just you.
That room was insane.
It's huge.
And, like, Manhattan. Like, I mean, I don't think it was a plaza.
Yeah. $900 a night room.
They really want that story. She
really wants that story, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the bellhop returns with his hand out for a tip. Mick shakes his hand, introduces himself, like, I'm so sorry I forgot to do this earlier. So he steps in, like, nope, sorry, I got it, and hands him money. And he's like, you got to pay for the room in advance.
I love that.
Yeah.
His confusion about the concept of tipping made me wonder if that was like an Australian, like, because, you know, countries are different.
Europe doesn't tip. You don't tip in Europe.
So I looked it up. I don't know if things were different in 86, but I read in a 2015 article that said that tipping is customary in Australia.
Okay.
But only if you think the person's done a above and beyond job. Like, if you think someone's done a fair to poor job, you're advised not to tip.
Even your waiter, though?
Yeah. And I think the amount that is customary there is about half of what's customary
here
in America.
Because here, like, if you could do a shit job as
and
a waiter,
you're still going to get a tip.
Opening the door and put what amounts to a garbage bag full of my belongings on the floor is not going above and beyond.
In a $900 a night room, though.
Yeah. If that dude had been like, would you like for me to draw you a bath? Would you like for me to turn the TV on?
Would you like a hand job,
sir? You like for me to, like, give me some options? And I'm like, I've opened the door. Tip me, please. Fuck you.
I've never seen a person just stick their hand out for a tip.
I have not.
I bet you they do it in New York a lot.
I've seen some lingering glances.
A lot.
Mick explores the room some more. Always loved the bit where he tapped the ashes into his hat.
He's looking around for an ashtray and there's not one. I love that.
Sue points out that there's TV just in case he gets bored. He says, I saw TV once years ago. Turns it on. I Love Lucy's playing. Yep. That's what I saw.
I love that joke.
It's genius.
I read that as 20 years ago or whatever it was that he saw a TV I Love Lucy was on.
No, yeah.
And
yeah.
he's like, oh, yeah, that's what TV is. It's I Love Lucy all the time.
There is, and I would love, maybe we can do some research for the next podcast or whatever, but there's a movie where someone says, I saw TV at the World, maybe it's Captain America or something. I saw TV once at the World's Fair. I think that they recycled that joke for one of the Captain America movies.
And oh, like, yeah.
This is what was on.
It's a joke of convenience because the fact that he 20 years ago saw I Love Lucy, and then the very first time he cuts on a...
It's the same thing.
It's the exact like, oh, same thing.
I've seen this before, boring.
Yeah, it wasn't the local news or...
So then in the bathroom of the suite, Mick's mystified by the bidet. Sue gives up trying to explain what it's for because he's confused. Downstairs, as she's getting into the limo, Dundee whistles and yells out the window. It's like, it's for washing your backside, right? Which is awesome.
There are no bidets in the plaza.
In all honesty, I probably wouldn't have known what a bidet.
Well,
bidets are awesome.
I've never fucked with a bidet.
Used a bidet.
Man, I will tell you, it's like that's a genius piece of equipment.
And you got to dry off after,
I mean, you can't use toilet paper. You got to use a towel.
But you're going to use much less toilet paper than you would to like wipe after a monster deuce.
I guess so.
I mean, I'm thinking like Taco Tuesdays.
Yeah, it is.
You need a whole bathtub.
It is. I will say it's oddly refreshing.
Oh, shit. You know? I have had like, you know, whatever, experiences where you're like, I need a shower afterwards. So, you know, it's like a simpler version.
It is. It is. So a bit later on, and this part really, and this is one of the reasons I love New York so much. And this is one of those movies that just like
captures
it. It makes me love because like I can remember the first time I was in New York City. I was a junior in high school, and it's like you seeing Mick go out of the hotel for his first stroll around Manhattan. I'm like, fuck yeah, that's a great feeling. Mm-hmm. So, of course, Mick being Mick, he's like trying to say hello to literally every person he meets. Mm-hmm. But it's quickly like overwhelmed by the experience. And then, and I have done this thing in New York, climbed up on the side of a lamppost mimicking Mick Dundee.
Just for, because you saw it on the movie?
Just because I'd seen it in the movie.
So apparently Hogan said that this, like, this was based on his first time as Paul Hogan visiting New York, like just being overwhelmed by it and all.
Yeah.
But that trip is sort of what inspired the kernel of the idea
for the
movie.
I love that.
There's great moments like in this where he's like, he sees a guy with a shaved head and he's just like chuckling at it, like the craziness of it all.
Fucking
or whatever.
California.
Or he's got like, he's also just doing it all with that massive knife on his hip.
Yeah.
Another
great
point.
How do you even get that through customs, right? If Eddie Murphy can't get his knife through customs,
that's what the holdup was.
Whenever I watch like New York street scene movies, I always look at the background because you can always see where they're stopping traffic and they're stopping. You can always, this is seamless. I don't see that shot, which I'm always
like, crowded as hell.
The only thing that I notice is that he's the only person moving against the flow of traffic, and the only other people that are moving in the same direction as him are about 20-30 feet back. I've noticed that they were keeping it separate.
Sure, but like in the very like perimeter, like you never, like you don't see like that group of like 20 people like gawking at the cars stuff like that. I've always wondered how they shot that. It's just the movie geek in me that
I love it.
Looks at stuff like that. I'm like, how do they do that? Because you see that in every film that's ever filmed in New York City, like that separation of like the real film people and like people who are looking at them film.
Totally.
I just nerded out.
I love it. The same, like I was the first time I was ever in Rome. Walked through Piazza Navona, and they were filming a scene from Angels and Demons. I saw Ron Howard and Tom Hanks, and they had all the crowd barricaded back 400 feet away from everything. They were like, "Please, please don't take pictures. Please don't have flash photography because it's gonna fuck up our shit."
Yep.
And I mean, just everyone back. But then they had other people that were extras like around the building, and so it's like, you know, it's just creating that microcosm of things. But it blows my mind, too, to think about all the work, especially watching a scene like that where there's so many extras.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like,
I don't know how
all
they did
the
that.
Coordination that that took, it just, it
almost
blows
feel
my
like
mind.
They, in a lot of those scenes, I almost feel like they guerrilla filmed it. Like, they just sat a camera, like, way back. Maybe. And were like, Paul, just run across the street.
When those bits where he's walking around Times Square, like, sure. You can't shut down Times Square.
Yeah, no way. Totally. No way. They were just, like, they set up a mini camera somewhere, and they would, like, just walk towards camera. Because he doesn't really do anything. He just walks.
There's mm-hmm. a lot of, in this, and I'll mention it later, I'm sure, but there's a lot of shades of Twins.
Yeah.
When you got Schwarzenegger exploring Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I feel like there have to be people just off camera, like, gawking at, hey, look at Schwarzenegger. Like,
sure. Camera.
What's yeah. happening here? Yeah, it's amazing.
I know it's a camera. I don't know who that Australian man is, but he's
that's true. If, yeah, you know, he was sort of unknown.
Yeah, he could have got away with that, right?
Right.
Nobody knew who he was.
They wouldn't have known what they were filming.
They weren't all you watching the Paul Hogan show.
So exactly. So I do love, like once he's up on the lamppost, like, checking everything out, the cop on horseback, like, comes over to him, and the next thing that we know, the cop on horseback's, like, bringing him back to the plaza.
On the horse.
Yeah, on
the
horse.
You're like, no way you let a dude ride your horse.
He's like, and is holding his knife.
Yeah, and I had it, and he's like, you know, like, he had time to check this out. You're an okay guy, Mick. Here's sure. your fucking
everyone
massive
loves
knife.
Mick immediately.
Yeah, yeah, the yeah. theme. That's part of his charm, for sure.
I did some research on New York knife laws. And so, one, you're not allowed to carry a knife with a blade that's more than 4 inches long.
That thing is, what, 10?
Yeah. I don't think the cop would give it back to him. Also, interesting, it's illegal for non-U.S. citizens to carry knives in New York City.
I would like to see if that was the case in the 80s. And then...
Oh, true. It could have been like different.
If he had checked his knife in Sue's bag...
No, I think you're right. I bet he got held up in customs because they were like,
sir,
holy
this
shit.
Knife is, you're carrying a katana sword.
Uh-huh. So, nah, yeah, they're not letting him bring that knife to you.
So the cop says, take it easy, Mick. Thanks, Mike. Hands him his knife back, his hunting
sword.
Back,
sir.
So then Mick goes to greet the doorman, who seems like he's sort of like confused and like over it.
That dude's got a nice face. I bet he was a stand-up comic or something.
Yeah, doesn't
guy.
He
His
look
name
familiar?
Is Irving Metzger or something like okay. that. And he was in 80s stuff. And yeah. he has a very recognizable... Yeah. He was in yeah. War Games and something else.
Oh,
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's but a very recognizable face. So cut to later that night at the restaurant, the aforementioned restaurant. Richard's there early, getting a head start and ogling another woman. Snake.
Asshole move, yeah.
As Sue and Mick are entering.
What were the drinks they were pouring out? They were like milky white. Were they White Russians?
That's a huge White Russian.
They were
yeah.
pouring out like, tall,
with a cherry on
with
top.
Like a, with a, I don't know what they are.
Like a cherry garnish.
Probably not a White Russian if it was in a tall glass.
It was like a stemware.
Pina colada, maybe?
Mm. Could have been, yeah. It didn't look icy, but
yeah.
It just looked creamy, but whatever.
Yeah. It's a good question.
Anyway.
Another
For another podcast.
So we should do a drink podcast. So Richard's trying real hard, laying it on thick. I'm eager to spend time with... He got here early to spend time with his girl.
Yeah, he okay. got early to get a little head, to get a little shit-faced.
Right, he's like, so what are, it's like, what are we sure. drinking? Two vodka martinis? And what's yours, crocodile? He's like, yeah, I'll have two of those. And it'll be a thanks.
I love... That's badass.
Yeah, I'll be like, two. Yeah, I'll have
two.
Whatever
I'll
you're
have
having.
Two martinis and a beer.
Does he, but does he know what a martini
no,
is?
No, not yeah, a clue.
But he drinks martinis straight the rest of the movie.
He is yeah. shit-faced on martinis the whole rest of the
but
movie.
But he's never drunk, though. That's incredible.
True. I feel like he has to have...
His tolerance is off the hook.
He has to have had a martini, at least the Bush version of a martini, which is probably just bourbon.
he's no, like,
there's a lot of Jim Beam in this bar there.
Vodka and an olive.
Yeah, yeah,
like
he's
that.
Had vodka.
Yeah,
right
there. There's
yeah.
no vermouth in it for fucking sure.
Yeah.
So Richard stands up and is wobbly, and Sue notices, and she's like, you have been here a while, which
right.
I take it as like, this is the first inkling that there's like cracks in the foundation, like you were saying, and it's like...
Yeah.
Maybe Richard drinks too much or something like that, and Sue's not into it.
I am a fan, though, of, like,
which is,
a pregame.
Yeah, same, but she's, like, double standard. She'll drink, but she doesn't want Richard to drink.
She'll do coke.
Well, she doesn't want to show up and have
she
to be...
She's doing coke
yeah, she's
in
doing
the
coke.
Airport bathroom, baby.
She's like, she's like the person that smoked weed but, like, looks down
she
on
wants
people
to
that
have
drink.
Her, she wants to have her cake and snort it, too. It's true. So... Richard immediately starts attacking Dundee in his drunkenness. He's like, this will be quite a novelty for you, eating something without having to kill it first.
Yeah.
Asshole. Yeah, like what would prompt, even when you're drunk and threatened, I can't imagine being confrontational to that level. Of course, I'm not an uber-rich asshole.
He's probably coked up, too.
He is definitely coked up.
Yeah.
Everything's working. All the chemicals in his body are working against each other. So at the table... As Richard flirts with Sue, Mick's like trying to, he's like, you guys should be here. And like, yeah.
Yeah, you should have
this, this should have been your date.
Yeah,
shouldn't be going on.
It's a stand up move.
Yeah, it is awesome. Also,
it's not fun to watch a woman that you like be with someone else.
But then,
you know, it's like,
Who, Mick or Richard?
I'm saying Richard. I'm saying Mick doesn't want to watch her flirt with Richard.
But that's what I'm saying is that then she, who kissed Mick back in Australia a day ago, says, sorry, it's just that we haven't seen each other in 6 weeks.
Maybe she's that type of girl who's just like horny. And
but I mean, what kind of that thing? What kind of thing is that to say to the guy that you were like, would you mind if I asked you to come to New York? Here's a kiss. My boyfriend and I haven't. It's like that's like everything that's bullshit, she does is like it sucks.
It's a little shitty.
It's very shitty. So Mick says that's all the more reason that I shouldn't be here. But she says we're not letting you spend your first night in New York alone. So Richard's like, yeah, definitely stay. But it's pretty obvious that he thinks Mick sucks. And then he continues to be a world-class douchebag. There's a moment where the waiter tries to put Mick's napkin in his lap or something. And like,
what is that shit? I've never been in a
place
where that happens.
I have been.
We're
in
not
places.
Dining at the same restaurants. The owner of Newsday.
I have been in like one restaurant where it was the waiter's job to come around and put a napkin in a lap.
Sure.
And then
that's
as I was watching it yesterday, I was thinking, that's cringeworthy. Now seeing him like grab the guy's hand and being like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
But then I feel like I'd be like, "What the fuck is this?"
Exactly. For someone that's never been in a restaurant like this, for someone to be reaching in your crotch, totally get it.
Now,
understood.
I had to rewind twice because I was like, my first thought was, does he like think he's grabbing for his knife? But he doesn't have the knife. He doesn't seem to have the knife on him in that scene.
Right.
Not on his hip, anyway. But yeah, I thought he was just grabbing around his crotch area. He's like, "Whoa, buddy."
I think you just startled him because nothing like that's ever happened to him before.
And you're encroaching on my personal space.
Right. So Richard takes the liberty of trying to order for everyone. He like says in some pretty shitty Italian to the guy, it's like, I'm glad it's been a while since I've seen you, but the Italian's not great. It's not great.
Uh-huh.
So, and then, he's like, I'll order for the table because I don't imagine they have anything like kangaroo steak or possum grits for you, crocodile.
Yeah. Fucking asshole.
So he thinks everything he says is amazing.
If there's ever been a dude who deserved a punch in the face, it's like Richard.
Well, it's kind of like the scene Coming to America.
Yes.
When they're playing basketball.
Yep. Not Eric LaSalle, though.
Yeah, Eric LaSalle's character.
Prickish character.
Yeah, big time. And it's all because they're
totally the vibe.
But I never like in Coming to America, it makes no sense because why is he threatened by Eddie Murphy's character? Because he's with the sister.
Right.
In this movie, I get it because like you're intruding on our space with
my
girl.
Clearly, it seems like my girl's got a thing for you.
Right.
In this movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen the physical evidence of that she's shown that yet. But the fact, like, Richard's obviously, like, super insecure, and I don't know. I get it, though, but, like, the first night back.
I would be mad. You guys would be mad, too, wouldn't you?
Yeah, night back, you're like, I not have a minute? It's been a month and a half?
Yeah, I mean, he probably did it the wrong way, but I would actually be furious at my girl for, like, why are you just got back, why are you inviting this dude?
It would have probably been more like, my darling, on my part. My darling, I haven't seen you in so long, and I was really hoping...
I've missed your touch.
I was really hoping we could spend... I had envisioned our first night back together being alone.
I'd have been like, what the fuck?
Fuck all this.
Flip the table.
This is bullshit.
So, yeah, Richard thinks everything he's saying is the funniest thing that's ever been said. Sue steps in to defend Mick and is like, they have the private joke about the Gamamora lizard or whatever the fuck it's called.
The Goanna, yeah.
Whatever.
Which really fucking triggers
Richard's like,
oh, so you two eat Goanna together? What the fuck is this shit? Yeah,
exactly. So Richard's like, okay, fine, Mick. Why don't you order for the table since you're so good at Italian? What
does Sue see in this guy, though, Richard?
I don't know. Because they come from the same, like, upper class white New York social structure.
We have to hope he's not always like this.
I think that there must have been something redeeming about him, but that he's become so obsessed with, like, running the paper well that he's become sort of an asshole. But anyway,
don't you think that he's just totally, I see it as he's just totally in love with Sue and he's jealous, so he's acting out a little bit.
But I think he's also an asshole.
I think with like a healthy dose of like sexual frustration, like,
yeah, definitely. No, definitely. Like, yeah, he's coked up. He is coked up and drunk at the same time.
And
he hasn't seen his woman in 2 months, and he's like, fucking
hell. Do you think he was faithful to her while she was gone?
No.
Okay. No. That's what I'm saying. So
I think he was.
You think so?
Yeah.
He was, like, waiting for that, and then she comes back with a dashing Australian.
So, I miss you, darling.
Like, when right before Mick and Sue walked into the, and he was sitting at the bar by himself drinking, mm-hmm. and, like, a woman walks by, and he's, like, checking her ass.
Yeah.
So maybe not.
I don't know. He's definitely like got eye. You know, he's human.
Yeah.
I will say he may not have acted on it, but he's thought about it.
Oh, surely.
Because he's definitely been out with like his, you know, Wall Street buddies while she's been gone.
Patrick Bateman and the rest of the American Psycho
at the exact same time. Yes. He was feeding cats ATMs while she was gone. So Sue tries to intervene. Mick's like, nah, I'll have a lash at it, which is a great slang term. I'll have a lash at it. The menu he sees is entirely in Italian. He creates a distraction by saying, you know, I think we should have what that fat Sheila is eating.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I actually had to put it on closed captions.
That's a little problematic, but I think he's also just trying to create a distraction.
Right, and so everyone turns, but then when they turn, he like punches the shit out of Richard, and it's not subtle like no one else saw. The entire restaurant went, like everyone saw it.
I don't think nobody saw it. I think they just saw him slump down, because honestly, I don't think they show it. I think he just does it like in some kind of ninja style. Yeah.
The way that they did the sound effect and stuff that everyone was like looking over, it made me think that like everyone.
Yeah, there
it.
Was a weird sound thing happening there. I gotta take another look at it.
I mean, we are talking.
Take a look at the tape.
Mick is the one punch guy, right?
That's true.
This is true.
Oh, man. So, yeah, Richard slumps unconscious in his chair. Dundee's like, this guy can't handle his drink. What's gonna happen next? It's anyone's guess. We're caught in a love triangle. Accurate. Sue's leading everyone on, that two-timing Sue.
Oh, man. She's in between a rock and a hard place.
Rock and a crocodile Dundee.
Croc and a hard place.
That's excellent. Well done. I guess we'll discuss it next time in the exciting fourth installment of our series on Crocodile Dundee. In the meantime...
Yeah, Mike, sign us off.
This is actually my last episode, so I'm going to dip out on you guys.
We love you, Mike.
Because these babies ain't going to close themselves. But I want to thank both of you guys for inviting me on. I've had the best time. I've really enjoyed this.
You are invited back anytime.
We love you, Mike. Yeah, we'll have you on for sure, and we'll do it earlier in the day.
Sure.
We'll take the day off. It'll be awesome.
All right, come back for the rest of the episodes, everybody. We'll be back.